Stand by. Your Steve Jones Show audio is loading now. SteveJonesShow.com podcasts are sponsored by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, the beverage supermarket.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. Stock up for the Olympics now. Well, sit down. So it'll be a little cold this weekend. Sit back and enjoy the great events, the pageantry of the Olympics, with the opening ceremonies tonight. Brewers Outlet's the place to go to. Maybe you want to check out college basketball this weekend. Great selection of beers, great selection of domestics. Fresh hot roasted peanuts, snacks, and, of course, the pickle bar. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Kevin's excited because it's the Olympics, and the big story is about the cauldron.
The big story is how they light the cauldron and the fact that they didn't hide the cauldron.
Which was neat. They actually had a bear do it, which was tremendous.
That's not true.
Oh.
There was a bear involved in the opening ceremonies.
There are several jokes I'm not going to go to right now. All right. So
no, I said a bear, not someone that was bear.
Oh, Bobby Hebert, the former quarterback for the New Orleans Saints.
Yes, wonderful. It was Bobby Hebert, yes.
He let the, wow.
Yes, that's who it was.
I'd have picked a guy like Tradiak since he's Russian. All right, let's bring in Donnie Collins from the Scranton Times-Tribune. Donnie, welcome back. It's great to have you with us on the show.
Nice to be back, Steve.
Donnie, what did you think about how James Franklin... And what do you think of his approach as to announcing a recruiting class is compared to all the other times we've ever seen it here?
Yeah, it went in 3 years from what's signing day to make sure you wear white to the party. It's 180 degree difference from what it used to be. It's, you know, and not, hey, it's more fun. And Penn State, you know, they really did it upright. I mean, the recruiting's always been something that the fans have followed and followed with a lot of interest, and you know, to celebrate it, on signing day is something that I think people are going to love to do going forward.
Yeah, I think so too. I think they did it right because all they did was really celebrate, you know, with the young men saying, "Hey, welcome to the program, welcome to the family." There was no grandiose, here we go. He's going to be the best wide receiver in the country. Nope, they didn't do that. They just basically said, hey, thanks for putting your trust in us. And I think they did it right. I think they made it fun, and they did it right.
Yeah, at some places, it's almost like they're bringing in an established superstar, and they treat him that way. And that was my fear, and I think it was the reason they didn't do anything here at Penn State in the past. You don't want to come in and make a kid out to be something that he's not going to be or isn't yet. And that's not fair to the kids. It's not fair to the fans. It's not fair to anybody. So, you know, come in, you know, welcome him to the family, welcome him to the program, say, you know, best of luck to you, and get to work the next day.
You are from a very passionate area because I know whenever I've done the Scranton dinner up in Dixon City, and whether it was Joe Paterno or Bill O'Brien being there, it was overflow every time for each. What has been the general reaction so far to the initial month of James Franklin being on the job in your area?
Extremely positive. He's a guy. I mean, they love the fact that he goes out and talks about what he's going to do. You know, about selling the program, being that confident. I mean, this is a confident area, Scranton. People, especially with sports, they like to go out. They like to say they're going to do something and go out and do it. And Franklin has done that, and O'Brien did it, and I think that's why he was as embraced as he was early on. I think, you know, once, you know, Penn State night comes around, up in Dixon City in probably 3 months from now, you're going to see another crowd of 1,000 or close to it, and it's going to be rabid because, you know, people really like to see somebody with a plan execute it around here. And Franklin is a guy with a plan who's executed it.
And there's no question. So far, he has been true to his word. That's what he's doing to this stage. And that's why, you know, it interests the fans. And when it comes to outreach to the fans, just pure outreach, having the event in the Jordan Center, even though it may have been a snowy day, just the mere thought of it, what did it mean to the fans up there?
It was, I'm not sure how many people around here who were intending to go didn't go because of the weather. It was pretty bad around here. But I know a lot of people were looking forward to it. It's the middle of February, beginning of February, and football is 7 months away, 6 or 8 months away, whatever it is. And, you know, people just want to be able to be involved with something football-related. And Penn State is, I would say, I mean, even including the NFL teams, I would say Penn State is the team around here that people, you know, follow, that they, you know, the vast majority of people around here get behind. So to be able to be part of something like that is a big thing. And even, you know, even though the weather probably robbed a lot of people from being able to drive down there to see what happened, you know, to be part of that, to see the guys talk, to see the welcoming of the players. I think just the fact that it was going on was something that people were following and just with intrigue, you know, what's happening, what's it all about, what's the atmosphere like. And if they have it again next year, and I'm certain they will, because it was a success, but if they have it again next year, I think you're going to get even more people there.
How closely do you follow recruiting based on the various things that you have to cover during the course of the year?
I follow recruiting probably, I really get into it after the bowl games.
Okay.
I see the guys who, I mean, lately it's been a little easier actually, because you see guys trying to, you know, commit to somewhere earlier, and then they, because they don't want to, you know, interfere with their studies and their, as a senior, their senior seasons or whatever. So, you know, you get them trickling in, and you get to watch a little bit of the film, and YouTube certainly helps. You get to watch some of that. So I'm a little more familiar now with a lot of the guys before that those bowl games end than I am, you know, than I used to be. But, you know, once those games end, you really start trying to, you know, find out some information on these guys and break down, is that, you know, the little film out there that's possible. And obviously all of them look like, you know, superheroes on film, because they're the biggest, fastest, strongest guys on their high school teams. But there's some things you can learn, and that's the part of it I really get into, is, you know, seeing a kid and, you know, imagining what he could potentially be going forward.
All right, what would your thought be? Now, college basketball is an early signing date. It takes place in November, then a late signing date that takes place in April. Would there be benefit in your mind to an early signing date for college football, say, I don't know, August?
Yeah, I think they should have an early signing date and a late signing date. And I don't think either of them should be in. I mean, I think one should be in, you know, August, September, October, in that area. And there should be one, I think, in April. I think they should have a late signing date in April, kind of to avoid what happened at Vanderbilt this year, where, you know, you have some kids who were committed there, and then Franklin leaves, and you have some kids who clearly want to follow Franklin, and, you know, and they do so, but then Vanderbilt doesn't have a whole lot of time. The early signing date for the kids who really want to go to a certain school, I think is great. But, you know, if you push it ahead a couple of months, make it April, and I haven't really thought of the, you know, the ins and outs and the drawbacks maybe to having it that late. I haven't put that much thought into it, but I think if you had it that late, then it wouldn't really, you know, interfere in kids' senior seasons, and maybe they take a little bit more time to commit to where they really want to go.
So for you, we go through the college season. We talked a lot during the course of the college season. Here we are talking again now. What's next on tap for you? What direction do you go in? Do you stay the football direction, or are there some other things that you need to take care of between now and a blue-white weekend?
I also cover minor league baseball team here. So, I mean, that's the AAA team of the Yankees. So I head down to spring training. So that, I mean, it never ends for me. But I mean, especially the last maybe 4 or 5 years since, you know, they started tracking who's reading what on the internet and all that. I mean, people around here read the Penn State stories. So it used to be, once Penn State season ended, you know, one signing day was over, give Penn State a rest for a couple of months, other than the blue-white game and lift for life and stuff like that. But now, I mean, you almost have to, you know, people read the Penn State stuff and the bosses know it, so you have to stay on top of that almost as if it's a, you know, a 12-month a year, you know, 12 months out of your beat. So, yeah, I mean, it's still going to be, you know, enough Penn State to get people by, but unfortunately for me, I go right into a full baseball season now.
Yeah, I want to ask you about the spring training thing, because you'll go down there to Tampa and check the Yankees out. When you're covering a Triple-A team, how do you go about that, Donnie? Do you start to get a read which players might end up playing at the ballpark in Music? Or do you start tracking guys that were with the club last year that may get a shot with the big club? How do you go about that?
I think you kind of have to judge what's going on in the big league camp and, you know, see who's, who, you know, you have people who are kind of willing to tell you what direction they're leaning, and sometimes the statistics are a good indication of that. You know, a lot of it is just having a feel for what, you know, the certain organizations you're covering, in my case, the Yankees, have done in the past with you know, are they going to keep the non-roster invitee, or are they going to go with the guy on the 40-man? Usually the Yankees will go with the non-roster guy. And then they'll send the young kid down. So I've never successfully predicted the entire 25-man opening day roster before it was announced. It's just not something that's always easy to do because, you know, especially in the minor leagues, you got guys who you've never heard of get signed after they've been released by another team, and then they're going to AAA as insurance, and it's, you know, it gets to be a big mess around April 1st. But once you're down in spring training, it's running over to big league camp to see what's going on over there, and then coming back over to minor league camp, and you know they're a good walking distance away in Tampa anyway for the Yankees. So it gets there's a lot of hustle involved in doing it that way, and it's a lot of fun to do for a week. I would never want to do it for 2 weeks. Let's put it that way.
Last year was about as interesting a year as you could ask for with that club, because it was a year in which both Derek Jeter and Alex Rodriguez were there. For you, what was it like covering them? And then the second part of it, Donnie, is what were each of them like with the fans?
It was interesting. To cover them, because Jeter became a little bit of a story here off the field, because he, you know, usually you get a guy down here and they stay in their hotel room, and or they go out and have a nice private dinner and that's it. But Jeter kind of you know commingled with the people here. He was, you know, there's a little deli. It's called the Downtown Deli across the street from the Times Building. And sure enough, Derek Jeter sitting there eating a sandwich, you know, when people are coming into work. And right in the middle of downtown, there's big windows there, and anybody walking by could see Derek Jeter in there. You're sitting down eating. So, but he really sampled the restaurants when he was here. So that became kind of another side story to the whole thing. So, you know, along with him coming, you know, trying to come back as it was. He was great with the fans. I mean, they have power outage. The only power outage they had at the stadium, I think, that I could ever remember during a game, came during one of the Jeter games, and he came out of the dugout, and while they were fixing the lights, he signed autographs. He was terrific with the fans. A-Rod tried to be. I think in his own way, he thought he was just as good as Derek Jeter, but you know, he just kind of got away about him. We had him here 2 years ago, maybe 2011.
Yes,
2010. One of those years, he was down rehabbing, and he really tries to put on his best face, but he just can't maintain it the whole time. And you know, when he was here this past year was one of the days that he came up with. It was the day before he was supposed to go back up to rejoin them in Texas, and he came up with a hip injury on a Sunday afternoon game after a Saturday night game, and he seemed to be walking fine. Everybody else, he was in the lineup, but he kind of backed out of it, and that was when when Brian Cashman and the Yankees decided, hey, we're gonna send you for an MRI. We're not gonna activate you tomorrow, and the whole plan blew up in A-Rod's face. So that was kind of interesting. But yeah, to have those two guys here, I mean, pretty much it seemed like they were here longer than they were in New York last year. So that was it's different than covering the guys who were just here on last year's team, kind of taking up space and being just here for insurance cases in case the Yankees had an injury last year, which happened about twice a night.
What a stunning answer as to how each one of them handled it. I'm just in shock that Jeter would actually come out and sign autographs and that A-Rod would attempt. Donnie.
He had it in his mind. He wanted to sign autographs really badly.
Oh, yeah. He had it in his mind. I got writer's cramp. You only did four. Yep, I came out. Donnie, thanks so much. Yeah, I waved. I waved to you. It's like, you know, I can't get hurt signing. Hey, Donnie, as always, an absolute pleasure. Appreciate it. And really, when you get a chance, do enjoy being down in Tampa for the week you're down there and find a good place to eat, okay?
Yeah, I will try. And we'll see you.
Donnie Collins. Scranton Times Tribune. Don't worry. We'll get back to the Olympics in a moment.
There's nothing going on right now. There's nothing to worry about. I'm all caught up for the day.
But the fans might not be. And we would like to talk about what's coming up tonight. Because supposedly we are being told that the opening ceremonies were simply spectacular today. Sure, there's a lot of Russian touches to it. It's their country. But supposedly they were spectacular, colorful, lots of pageantry. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first, I want to make sure you know about Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. Great selection of beverages, domestic beers, fresh hot roasted peanuts, pickle bar, a wide array of snacks. That is Reagan Street in Sunbury. They're not called the beverage supermarket for nothing. And, of course, I'm in the Sunbury Motor Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, keywords 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. We'll talk about the Olympics in a moment. Then we'll get to Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. It close out with the Olympics. That's all coming up over the next 38 minutes right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai, in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
The entrance music for the St. Louis Rams. All right, we welcome everybody. I'm surprised that is not on your ringtone.
That's the one album I don't have. Well, until about 5 hours ago. That's John Williams from the Summer Olympics album in 1988 called Olympic Spirit.
How many of these do you have?
I have some in the Heroes, and I will now own the 1988 Summer Olympics album because that has all the John Williams music that you'll hear on NBC for the next 16 days.
How many have you bought?
Just the two.
Okay. Well, NBC does a great job. This is a great celebration of sports, no question about it. There's certain events, yeah, I really do enjoy in the Olympics. I mean, I've been kidding him about what I don't like. It's only been a part of an act where I've been kidding him. I love the downhill. I mean, to me, that is a signature event anytime. And at most alpine, like GS, I'll definitely watch GS, you know, men's and women's. and the downhill. Bobsled, always enjoy watching that. I'll watch that. Ski jumping, love watching ski jumping.
Yeah, that's good.
Let's see. They could do like a 2-minute package on cross-country skiing. That'd be fine.
I like watching the target side, but when they're just skiing up and down the hill, I have to admit, that doesn't even excite me that much.
What?
Like, if they're shooting, I like watching that part of it. Because I like that. I like how the athletes have to watch, the, you know, how to get their heart rate down so they can actually be calm and shoot. I actually like that. I would think you would be a big fan of short track speed skating, though.
I would love to actually, you know, short track's fine, and so is regular speed skating.
Yeah, that's good, too.
Yeah, because, again, it's a race. You're working against the clock time. I like that. Kind of reminds me, you know. But as for the cross-country skiing, the biathlon, I mean, if they made a paintball competition, now I would watch that.
You'd watch. You'd
Norway's
watch.
Out! Got him! Now that screams America. It's like the America's Cup. I say arm the boats. I mean, now you're talking about something Americans love.
Arm the boats. Ski cross and snowboard style cross, those are entertaining to watch. It's like four men in a race, or women, left and right turns, jumps, that, and they bump into each other. It's like NASCAR on snow.
I'm sure there's a good basketball game on that night. All right, so...
What's coming up, Steve?
Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. We're going to mention your favorite guy, Polamalu, again. Mike Ditka says he might as well be a linebacker now because he can't play the pass.
When was the last time he coached? Enough said!
You're a bitter guy.
Don't insult my man. Don't insult my player.
Insult your player.
First time in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. The Olympics are underway. The opening ceremonies were said to be spectacular today. You'll see it tonight on NBC. Competition did start yesterday with preliminary competition. NBC scored an 11.8 overnight rating, which is astronomical. Big Bang Theory is normally the number one comedy on Thursday night. And the Big Bang Theory did not lose a viewer last night, but their rating was a 5 overnight. That is a typical overnight rating for them, a 5. And they kept it there. But they're also number one in their time slot with a 5. 11.8 is astronomical and shows the national feeling about watching the Olympic Games. And that includes the opening ceremony tonight, which will draw a great Friday night rating as well. Pomp, circumstance, and said to be spectacular. We're going to deviate from that for a moment. We're going to bring in Tony DeFazio of the Pittsburgh Sports Report, as we do every Friday. Tony, great to have you back with us. Whoops. Okay. Tony? Where's my man? I guess we lost our guy here. All right. Well, try and get Tony back on the line here in just a few moments and talk with him about what's going on, especially with Pirates and the Penguins and the Steelers. Of course, we've got to talk about the Steelers at some point because Kevin needs to know about that. But the Olympics did extremely well by getting, obviously, that 11.8 overnight rating, which is a tremendous number. That is the highest number on a Thursday night that NBC has had since they had a Thursday night game. I guess it may have been the Ravens game this year. When they had that back in September with Chris Collinsworth, Al Michaels, and so forth. That's the best that they have done to this point when it comes to Thursday night ratings. CBS has owned the ratings on those particular nights. Well, CBS has been the number one. And you wonder why CBS went after getting, by the way, Thursday night football. Well, they want to continue to dominate that particular night, especially set the tone going into the weekend. And they're going to put Jim Nantz and Phil Simms on there. But I think it's interesting that they've done that. And for NBC, a great start. Remember, the competition last night was preliminary competition,
That was it. Preliminary competition. They still did extremely well with it. What does that tell you, that they did so well with that? That really gives you a great story about what they've done with the Olympic Games. And, it's a big plus for them. That's what they were looking for. That's the kind of bump. And February is a critical month for those who understand how the TV business works. TV business works in such a way where the big night happens to be, where the big months are November, February, and May. Those are the sweeps months. So, I mean, that's important. All right, let's see if we get Tony DeFazio back on the line. Tony, welcome. Sorry about that. Great to have you with us on the show.
I always happy to be with you guys on a chilly Friday.
Yeah. I did a couple talk shows today, by the way, in Illinois. It was 8 below 0, which was the high temperature for the day there. Unbelievable.
Yeah, that's one thing Chicago always has on us, I guess, right? It's always, no matter how bad it is here, they always seem to have twice as much snow and a lot worse temperatures.
So. Awful. Chris Letang, what happened there? He's out 6 weeks. They say he suffered a mild stroke.
Yeah, scary as heck. It was started out as nothing more than some mild nausea the morning of a skate. I guess it was last Wednesday. The team was out west, and actually they had their mothers with them. They invited all the players' mothers to make this West Coast road trip with them, and he was out with his mother and his mother-in-law. And it was a little bit of nausea, and they decided he wasn't going to participate in the skate. And then he felt a little bit better the next day, flew to Los Angeles with the team, and then it got even worse, I guess, and they decided they needed to do some tests. A couple days later, I guess, they decided that, yes, he has a small hole in the wall of his heart, which apparently caused this stroke. And like you said, it was a mild stroke. They're saying that his career is not in jeopardy. But he'll miss the next 6 weeks, and then he'll be reevaluated. 26 years old, and Steve, we can talk all we want about whether he makes the best decisions in his own zone with the puck or not. But I mean, this is a 26 year old elite athlete in the prime of his career. Just goes to show that anything can happen to anybody at any time. It's pretty scary and pretty sobering.
6 weeks, by the way, includes 2 weeks of the Olympics, so it's actually 4 weeks of competition, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
So, again, they'll reevaluate him then and see where he stands. So he'll be on some blood thinners, and I guess he seems healthy right now, and I guess the deal is to make sure he gets the proper medication. So adjusting those medications over the next few weeks will probably have a lot to do with how quickly he's able to return to the ice.
What about the interesting decision that the Bruins made with Zdeno Chara? He is from Slovakia. He will play in the Olympics for that team. They wanted him to carry the Olympic flag in Russia, and the Bruins said yes. What does that tell you about the respect between organization and player?
Well, I think that speaks volumes, certainly, and that's for anybody who follows the Bruins, that's not a surprise. He's probably one of the most respected guys in the game, frankly, as far as organization to player. No question about that. And I think it also speaks volumes for how much the NHL understands how much their players respect the Olympics and how meaningful the Olympics are to these players. There was some talk about, what would happen if Russia wanted Evgeny Malkin to do the same, and the prevailing thought was, my goodness, it's in his home country. They certainly would let him go and let him carry the flag and miss a game, because he would have missed, obviously, tonight's game against the Rangers. But that didn't happen. But yeah, I think not only is Chara that well respected, but I think the league understands how much their players, at least for the time being, they understand how much their players respect the Olympics and how much it means to them.
Tony, has the league felt that the Olympics have given the league a bump? I mean, has that happened for them? And what's happened in 6 and in 10? Gretzky running the organization in 10 and so forth. Did they feel like they got a bump? I mean, obviously in between there's been the lockout, but did they get a bump?
I don't know what the league heads in Toronto think exactly. I know there's concern about players getting hurt and so forth, but I can tell you that the players themselves, especially the foreign players, the European players, folks not from North America, look at the Olympics as that's their main exposure to hockey. Ali Mata, a young European player for the Penguins, you know, talked about how they didn't get NHL games. And so, you know, they get a couple NHL games in Europe, and his biggest exposure to NHL players was in the Olympics. And without the Olympics, who knows, you know, how interested or when Mata, you know, would have made that commitment. And not just Mata, but players like him, you know, to hockey. So I think in Europe and Asia, it's even bigger, you know, than it is for the American and Canadian players.
All right, so now that break is coming up and spring training is about to get underway. The Orioles and the Phillies have not reached an agreement with A.J. Burnett. Is the Pirate door still open?
It certainly seems like it is. You know, I don't know what the numbers are right now. I don't know, you know, what A.J. Burnett exactly wants to do. Certainly he's been active on Twitter talking to Pirates fans and engaging them over the past couple of days. And, you know, that's been an interesting component to watch. Who knows what that means? We all look to Twitter now to get, you know, to get clues. Who knows whether those are real clues or just flat-out entertainment for a guy like A.J. Burnett. But, yeah, I think the door is open. You know, he certainly enjoyed playing in Pittsburgh, and I think the benefit, frankly, Steve, that Pittsburgh has over Baltimore is the Pirates don't play in the American League East. And I think A.J. Burnett is very comfortable not pitching to American League East hitters.
Yeah, exactly right. I think he had enough of that when he was in the Yankees organization, without question. The Pirates, does it appear that at shortstop and at first base they are going to stand pat? Because Steven Drew is still out there.
It certainly does appear that way. You know, I think that they like what they have between Clint Barmas and Jody Mercer, at least enough to head into the season with that. You know, if Jody Mercer can continue to hit in the 260, 270 range, and all of a sudden Clint Barmas is your, you know, defensive replacement, your late-inning defensive replacement, that changes his value to the team as well, as opposed to being a 220, 215 hitting starter. At first base, I think the situation is a lot more dire. You know, I think it begs for somebody else to come in and help Gabby Sanchez. Gabby Sanchez can be okay as a platoon guy, but you know, if you ask him to hit against both righties and lefties, I think you're asking for a lot of trouble there. And I don't know how deep into the season the Pirates are willing to go. They don't have an internal answer at either of those positions. What you see on the roster is what you get. A couple other positions, there are some young guys, but not at those positions, at least not yet.
I'm sorry, but no offense. I could not settle for Clint Barmas at shortstop. I mean, and I say that with all due respect to somebody who has far more talent than I ever will in that particular sport, but we're talking about an elite 30-team major league roster. That one makes no sense to me.
Well, you know, again, I think if Mercer, and I think they must be feeling that Mercer can grab that starting job. You know, he is not much of a defensive player. Barmas is a guy that, you know, again, Steve, I do agree with you. You know, you can't have a guy, you know, he was an automatic out last year, and that really just cripples the offense at the bottom of the order. If Mercer can play there just about every day, and, you know, and Barnes is getting the Sunday afternoon starts and coming in to play the seventh and eighth and ninth innings, it's a little bit of a different story. Again, they're putting a lot of eggs in Jordy Mercer's basket, though, and we're talking about a guy who had a solid half of a season as a major leaguer, nothing more than solid.
All right, the Steelers are going to have some decisions to make here. Any rumblings on who makes the cut list?
It's all going to come down to what they decide to do, I think, with Lamar Woodley. You know, that's going to be the leading, you know, domino. That's going to be sort of the first domino. I don't know how Ryan Clark can come back. I don't know how, like, Taylor can come back at his current number. Clark is a free agent. Woodley and Taylor are both under contract. To bring them back at the level that they're earning right now, Taylor, simply because he's a 34-year-old cornerback, and those guys go downhill very fast. We started to see that last year. He's due about $12 million. That just can't happen. There's no two ways about that. Woodley, you know, it's going to be interesting. If Woodley can play and he's healthy, he can contribute, but he's just not been healthy, Steve. And, you know, it comes down to if they cut him, it's going to cost them about $14 million and change. They owe him well over $20 million. So they have to decide whether he's going to be able to perform or not. He's just not been able to do that. I see them eating that nearly $15 million with Woodland.
Big one there, no doubt about it. And I brought this up before about Polamalu. There's a lot of emotion surrounding him and Does he stick?
I think he does stick. You know, I do. I think that they have, frankly, bigger problems with Taylor and with Woodley because of their lack of performance. Polamalu did stay healthy for the first time in a long time last year. He can't cover the way he used to. In fact, you know, some former players who are now analysts, Mike Ditka among them, referred to him as a linebacker because he can't cover anymore. He's strictly right. a linebacker. But he had a pretty good season, and again, Dick LeBeau knows how to use those guys. So the other side of that is someone's got to come back because they need players, so they're going to have to decide. I can't see them letting both Ryan Clark and Troy Polamalu walk. They don't have safeties to step into those roles.
All right, what about the Ryan Clark story, which certainly garnered plenty of headlines?
Yeah, more names were mentioned, I guess. you know, I couldn't help but you know, think back to the Santonio Holmes years when Clark talked about the players that chose to use marijuana. And frankly, he was very serious about it and talking about it as an agent, you know, so they wouldn't have to take Vicodin and these other painkillers, using it truly for medicinal purposes. It's such a brutal game. I think there's a lot of people that are going to take Ryan Clark at his word for that. But then you look back to a former teammate like Santonio Holmes, and you get a bit of a different picture in your mind. So, you know, I think that story is going to get some more legs this weekend and, you know, maybe hit a little bit harder next week. And, you know, the team isn't in town right now, so there's not a lot of players around to comment on that. I guess, again, we'll go back to social media and have to look to Twitter for clues.
So it'll be interesting to see how the organization feels about it, let alone other players.
Yeah, that's a good point as well. And, you know, Ryan Clark is who he is. He's an outspoken guy. He always has been very intelligent, very well-spoken, the best guy to go to when you want thoughtful, honest comments about the game and about what's going on. And we saw that again. You know, he's got a career, I think, after football doing this. You know, again, you know, Ryan Clark was not joking about this whatsoever. He was extremely serious. And it's an issue the NFL, you know, the NFL has to, I think, seriously look at. Pete Carroll's commented about it, of course, Mark Brunell as well. So, you know, I think Ryan Clark, the fact that he's out there in front of a topic like this is not surprising.
At the same time, National 11-10 Day has come and gone. We know about Penn State did extensive coverage about that and the job that James Franklin did landing a class that, you know, by all accounts, is a lot of people are very impressed with, especially considering the time frame. What about Pitt? How well did they do?
Well, you know, it depends how you judge recruiting classes, I guess. The recruiting experts don't think they did very well. They're in the bottom half of the ACC, you know, that certainly isn't good. They're around 40th or so in most of those, you know, recruiting rankings. And again, anywhere, you know, right in the middle to the slightly under the middle of the ACC. But it's a class with a Paul Chryst flavor, a lot of linemen and a lot of running backs. And that's where the bulk of their, you know, four-star guys come from, those positions. And that's the way they built their team at Wisconsin. And I guess Pitt fans right now have to just trust that Paul Chryst knows what he's doing. It's going to be difficult for him to out-recruit for some of the, you know, elite-level guys. And we saw him get beat in Western PA for a lot of the top guys. Last year they did a little bit better. This year they got beat for six four-star players in Western Pennsylvania. He got two of them. The other four went to four other schools. And that's disconcerting for a lot of folks. But last year's class was not considered to be all that much better. And they had seven kids come in and start. And it looks like they may have begun the process of turning the corner over what was a disastrous couple of seasons prior to Chryst's arrival.
What about the loss of Bobby Engram taking the job with the Baltimore Ravens?
You know, a lot of people are going to talk about how it's going to hurt Pitt on the recruiting trail, and that certainly is true. He brought in arguably the two best players in the past two classes, Tyler Boyd last year, a wide receiver from Clareton, and Adonis Jennings, a New Jersey wide receiver in this most recent class. But I tell you what, Steve, it's going to hurt them in practice and in teaching and coaching, maybe even more so than on the recruiting trail. He gets a lot of credit for being a dynamic recruiter, and he was that. He was not Pitt's most active recruiter. Maybe, you know, again, he brought in some of the bigger name guys, but he was a great, great teacher of the game. And Tyler Boyd couldn't talk enough about everything he learned from the first day of camp to the last day of camp, and from the beginning of the season to the end of the season. And with a young, you know, star receiver coming in from New Jersey in Jennings, he's going to miss that. So I think it hurts Pitt. I think it hurts them even more so coaching wise, though, than it does on the recruiting stuff.
Tony, always a pleasure. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Same to you, Steve. Thank you.
And that's Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The theme music. To the Sochi Olympics. I don't think so. Yes, the Beatles. They thought there were going to be a few people at the airport when they landed at Idlewild, JFK Airport. And there were 5,000 to 7,000 people. Every radio station they turned to in the car on the way in was playing their songs. They were stunned. Thousands outside the Plaza Hotel waiting for them. An amazing journey for them to the Ed Sullivan Show. On that week in 1964, of the top 20 songs on Billboard's chart, 14 were from the Beatles. You didn't think I knew this, did you, Cody? You're shocked. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Have a great weekend, everybody.